The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Police just released dramatic video of 28-year-old Audrey Hale shooting out a door at the Covenant School in Nashville and then entering the private Christian elementary school where police say Hale killed three students ages 8 and 9. One was the church pastor's daughter and three adults, a custodian, a substitute teacher, and the school's headmistress, 60-year-old Catherine Kuntz.
Well, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, or the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer coming to you from our beautiful campus that you can see up on the screen there in Edstone, England. So much going on in the news today, as usual, starting with just this tragic story from the U.S., that horrible shooting there, which you just heard the basics of in that news report, where you've got some transgender woman who pretends to be a man, kind of goes back to her private Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee, you know, shoots three adults and three children. And it's, you know, it is a shocking and a tragic story. You saw some of the pictures of one of the little girls that was killed yesterday. You know, we're living in Satan's world, and this is what that looks like at times. And you know, we've got to talk about this. We've got to talk about what happens in that, and we've got to talk about as well, though, the new world that's coming and the solution that God has for these shootings, and the great hope that He has as well. But I think the most striking thing from what we saw yesterday is, of course, that if this had been a shooting at a nightclub for homosexuals like we've seen recently, you know exactly what would have been the narrative this morning, what would have been all over all of the newspapers and the TV shows. You know, those that spread hate, they are guilty of this crime. Those that spread hate have blood on their hands. Strangely, no one in the media seems to be making this case this time around. But really, I think in this case, some of that would be much more justified. You know, to be sure, the crazy person that carried out the shooting, they're the guilty party. But, you know, society mollycoddles homosexuals, and society kind of goes all out against protecting them and their feelings and not saying anything and not having them exposed ever to anything that might hurt their feelings, while the LGBT movement constantly preaches hate against Christianity. Hatred about anything that's got a connection with biblical morality and biblical and traditional families. You know, it's a bit further on in my notes, but there's a Transgender Day of Vengeance, or Trans Day of Vengeance, coming up in just a few days. And they've had activists, you know, posting pictures of themselves with guns on Twitter and this kind of thing. You know, that kind of intolerance, that kind of hate spreading hate against Christian groups, the left is right on board with. They're a-okay with. You know, you see this as well in the attacks on adoption centers and places that are there to help pregnant mothers. They'll be firebombed while they'll try and protect abortion centers. And if you even pray silently outside an abortion center, you can go to jail. While places that help expectant mothers are getting attacked. Just absolute hypocrisy. But you know, society tells you if somebody opposes homosexual marriage or they've got Christian principles, well, it's okay to hate them. It's fine to talk about killing them. No problem there. And, well, then we saw the kind of shooting that we had yesterday. Now, this was, I think we wrote this on our website, the vast majority of school shootings involve a young, often fatherless boy addicted to pornography, video games, and some kind of drugs. This shooting was different. It was perpetrated by a woman who identifies as a man, living in a state that is standing up against the mutilation and indoctrination of children, who is part of a community that is threatening more and more violence by the day. And it shows how dangerous this transsexual movement is. I mean, yeah, we talked about that is typically the profile of a school shooter, a fatherless boy. But more and more, you are seeing shooters from this kind of LGBT, to use their terminology, background. You had the Colorado shooter. Somebody tweeted this. The Colorado shooter identified as non-binary. The Denver shooter identified as trans. Aberdeen shooter as trans. Nashville shooter as trans. You're starting to... I mean, the government talks a lot about domestic terrorism. If we're going to look at domestic terrorism, we should look at the transgender movement and the LGBT movement. But of course, because of where this shooter is coming from, the focus on the news media is gun ownership. You've got to talk about gun ownership. That's the only thing that you could talk about. Like I said, if it was a different perpetrator, a different situation, you would have people saying, well, we've got to talk about all the hate that's coming from this group or that group. That's the cause here. They've got blood on their hands. But in this case, well, no. It's very explicitly, don't talk about the motivation. We mustn't talk about the motivation. Just focus on the weapon. Just focus on the fact that a gun here was used to kill people. Only look at that. Don't look at anything else. You know, CNN had a clip where they pretty much explicitly said exactly that. Take a look.
Each of these school shootings has motive and means. Motive goes to the particular person, what's their mental health situation, what happened at the school, why did they choose that target? As Andrew was saying, what clues did they leave behind? What was their community seeing? And then the means. And then that's when you get the connectivity, right? That's when you start to see these are all starting to look the same, right? I sort of think now, like, we don't own guns in this country. Guns own us at this stage. And this is where we have to now focus on an important part of an agenda, which includes mental health, protecting our kids, fortifying schools, but also the connectivity, which is a certain kind of gun. Pronouns do not kill children, right? People with guns kill children, and it's going to be a distraction in our coverage and keep us from what we now know, which is each of these cases has a similarity more than any difference.
It's crazy. Don't focus on the motive. They explicitly say it. It was almost like saying the quiet part out loud. In this case, don't focus on the motive. Every school shooting has a motive. They're saying, well, this, you need to ignore the motive in this case. The motive's a distraction. Just focus on the means. Only focus on the fact that this individual used a gun. That's what we're telling you. We know best. You need to listen to us. Only focus on that. And she had that line, pronouns don't kill. You know, 5 seconds ago, the media was saying the exact opposite. You know, 5 seconds ago, you were saying, well, there's an epidemic in suicides in the transgender community. If you use the wrong pronoun, you could literally be killing someone. You know, remember that? This was the excuse for kicking people off Twitter, that misgendering someone is violence. They were saying this. They were saying it is literally violence if you use the wrong pronoun. And Twitter was kicking people. I mean, this was the whole thing that kind of got that Elon Musk buying Twitter. They kicked the Babylon Bee off because the Babylon Bee gave their Man of the Year award to a man. And they said, well, you know, using the wrong pronoun violates our policy on violence. So, you know, it used to be if you use the wrong pronoun, you are literally committing a violent act. You have to use the right pronoun or it's violence. Now, what pronoun you use doesn't really matter. Well, pronouns don't kill people. Nothing to see here. It's just a crazy, crazy switch. Now, of course, you know, mental illness, demonism has a lot to do with mass shootings. We talk about this as well. I mean, I mentioned it at the start. Whenever you see these mass shootings, it's evidence of Satan cast down. You're seeing more and more of these shootings. You know, the Bible talks about a very real spirit world. And you read even something as mainstream as the Gospels of Jesus Christ, or the Gospels about Jesus Christ, the first four books of the New Testament. And there are always these constant interactions with demons. Jesus Christ was very clear that they're real, they play an impact in this world. And then you look at Bible prophecy and you can see where Satan and the demons have been cast down, and that absolutely plays a huge role in world events. And that's where we get a whole lot of these shootings from. And once again, you know, we've got Tomorrow's News Today with the Trumpet magazine Are Satan and the demons real? Mr. Flory was holding this up on yesterday's show, where you know, that goes through, and those first two articles talk about the role that, that demons play in this world. And sadly, you see that with these school shootings. I mean, one of the things that I had an article, one of those articles is mine. You know, one of the things that that I kind of get into and that really I think I learned about in the course of writing on this article is that connection between the transgender movement and demons. You know, I think you see in some of these other school shootings, you see drugs involved and you see violent video games involved, maybe fatherlessness involved. And I don't know, some of those may also be involved in this one. I don't have all the details. But those things can all be, you know, especially things like drugs, well, you know, they can be gateway and violent video games and movies and things. They can all be gateways into demonism, and that can lead to these kind of shootings. But this kind of extreme transgender ideology, that can be a gateway to that as well. In 1 Timothy 4, Paul warns about those that depart from the faith listening to the doctrine of devils, or the doctrine of demons, as that should read. And one of these doctrines he lists is forbidding to marry. God created marriage and family for a wonderful purpose. God created sex and gender for a wonderful purpose. He created man and woman. And there's an incredibly deep vision in God creating man that way. He did that to help us learn about the God family. He wanted to give everybody a father. From the youngest age, they can then learn about God the Father. And they can learn, and we can all learn through family about our potential to be born into the God family. And through family expanding, we can learn about God's family expanding. There's just a wonderful vision with so many specific and practical lessons. And Satan and the demons hate that. And so forbidding to marry, it's a doctrine of demons. There's nothing wrong with not being married. You know, Paul himself, who wrote those words, was not married. But this hatred of marriage, this hatred of the idea of gender, of traditional gender roles, and all of that comes right from the demons. And just writing that article, for me, it was eye-opening, just this kind of connection between the transgender movement and this outright demonism. I mean, Mr. Flory, of course, Mr. Gerald Flory, at the start, he makes this point that this kind of very obvious, blatant, outright demonism, you know, it's there and it's worrying. Yet Mr. Flory writes, yet the real threat that Satan and his demons pose in our world goes far beyond the obvious examples. You know, the real threat is even deeper. But those obvious examples teach us a lot about this world. You know, they're proof of Satan cast down, and they're proof of a lot of what Mr. Flory has been writing in America Under Attack. But you know, you really saw in that, when I was researching that article, that connection between that transgender movement and outright demonism, you know, people mutilating their own bodies to become more like the genderless demons who don't have sex and gender and anything like that, the ability to reproduce themselves. And I'm not saying every transgender person is demon possessed or anything like that. You know, it's becoming a big fad and a big trend, and there's some, you know, a lot maybe are going along as just part of that trend, but certainly some, especially those that are really deeply into this movement, there's a lot of demonism involved. As I wrote in that article, 1 in 4 LGBT youth use gender-neutral pronouns. That's shocking in itself. It's becoming so popular. But one of these gender-neutral pronouns is fey, fair, fey-self. They'll, instead of he, she, or himself. And fey is basically a pagan name for a demon or for a spirit. You know, these people are wanting people to refer to them as demons. And actually, I don't know, it would almost be comic if it weren't so tragic. There are real-life pagans complaining about cultural appropriation because the LGBT movement has taken their word. And it's just, with the internet these days, it's so easy for people to create extreme communities, for people to find their way into these extreme communities, and there's all kinds of you're just very weird things that are just a click of the mouse away. You know, you have as part of this kind of wider, extreme transgender movement, you have things like the other kin or fiction kin, where people claim to identify as animals or dragons or even demons themselves, trapped in a human body. And then there's strong connections with these other movements. Like there's kind of, you know, there's a neo-pagan movement and witchcraft that is becoming incredibly popular online and with some of these video sharing platforms like TikTok. It's incredible how popular witchcraft is on TikTok. And what's it called? Witch Talk, I think it is. And this kind of thing. But you look at who's involved in that. And for so many of them, they're transgender. Overwhelmingly kind of overrepresented in some of those. And even there's online, you know, people they call dissociative identity disorder. People with multiple personalities. And they're streaming videos of their different multiple personalities. And they're saying, well, it's normal and it's fine. And it shouldn't be classified as a mental illness. And again, all of these people doing that just about are transgender. So you've got this, you know, there is a strong level of demonism involved in that. And so now then you've got this horrible school shooting carried out by someone from the so-called transgender community. And like I said, it's really not surprising after all of that level of hatred that's being poured out from the left against, you know, anyone that would stick to anything that comes from the Bible or that's remotely close to anything that's from the Bible and upholds biblical morality. It says in Isaiah 59 and verse 15, he that departs from evil makes himself a prey. If you refuse to go along with the evil that they're doing, well, they'll attack you. We'll talk about that in a story later in the show as well. But you see this in we've seen this so far in a lot of legislation and in the way the government will try and persecute anyone that doesn't go along with this, and they'll have all kinds of, the going after bakers that refuse to bake a cake, and, you know, if you do not participate, you're the enemy. And now here, well, it's because it's a Christian school, they make themselves a prey. They won't go along with this movement, so someone from this movement comes and attacks them. There's one more kind of slight related point to this I wanted to cover. We saw President Biden's response to this story was pretty shocking. I'm almost hesitant to show it, but it is pretty important news. It shows us a lot about who is really running the country. This is clip two.
My name is Joe Biden. I'm Dr. Joe Biden's husband. And I ate Jenny's ice cream, chocolate chip. I came down because I heard there was chocolate chip ice cream. By the way, I have a whole refrigerator full upstairs. I think I'm kidding. I'm not. God. Ben, how are you, pal? One of the best guys in the United States Congress, Ben Cardin. Folks, it's a delight to have you all here. And who are those good-looking kids back there? Are your kids, all four of them?
Yes.
Well, stand up, guys.
John, we'll jump back in here. Considering the moment.
We were told that the shooting just happened
left three children dead. Three adults dead, shooters dead, and we were told he would be addressing this off the top.
It's rather surprising. I thought that a somber President Biden would have come to the podium here and addressed the school shooting.
So I didn't set that up in the best way, but you heard the end of it where, you know, the media were like, well, okay, we've told President Biden's about to give a statement on what is on this tragedy, and we'll go now to the White House for this statement. And then it was just him kind of joking around with a bunch of the kids. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think he meant to be disrespectful or anything. It just seems like he just didn't know. He's not in control. Didn't seem like he had a clue that was what he was meant to be speaking about. And so he just kind of does the normal, you know, friendly, joking, warming up the audience, appearance kind of routine. Clear proof who's running the country and definitely clear proof of who isn't running the country, where he has no idea really what is going on. Well, we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we will we'll talk about another dramatic story this weekend or just over the last few days coming out of Israel. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does He allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. Well, now to news from Israel. We had some dramatic protests taking place in the Jewish state of Israel over the Middle East. I think we've got some footage lined up that we can show you. We really have been seeing all kinds of big protests around the world. It kind of felt like on Friday, Trumpet Hour, I was talking about all these big protests in France and massive fires there. And now pretty dramatic scenes on the streets of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. I think huge numbers of people out on the streets in Tel Aviv. It's a more liberal city. Lots of people out on the streets in front of the Prime Minister's residence in Jerusalem as well. And of course, our Jerusalem office is just around the corner from that. I'm sure they had front row seats for a lot of those kind of demonstrations. So you had some, those dramatic protests. You had an effort to oust the Prime Minister, Mr. Netanyahu, yesterday. There were a couple of no confidence votes held. He won them both, I think 159-30, another 60-51. And then I think it was towards the end of the day yesterday, he caved in, climbed down and gave in temporarily, at least. He said he was just delaying rather than canceling his plans, but gave in to the protesters. And Mr. Flory read to you on Friday's show Melanie Phillips' article that really kind of sets this subject up last time, explaining what is going on. But really, you've got Israel has been, their democracy has been overthrown. It's been taken over by unelected judges, by a Supreme Court that has come in and awarded itself all kinds of sweeping powers and then made itself immune from any kind of political control. And it's these judges that are then going on and basically making up the rules for Israel while saying, we know best, we know better than lawmakers, we know better than voters. And if we think that this is the right and reasonable thing to do, then that's what must be done. And we're deciding that is what the law says. And nobody is allowed to overrule us or issue any countervote. If you do, well, democracy is under threat. I saw this on Twitter. This is a quote, I think, from Robert Bork's book. He says, Israel has set a standard for judicial imperialism that can probably never be surpassed and one devoutly hopes will never be equaled elsewhere. The sad irony is that the Supreme Court, operating with a basic law that specifies Israel's values are both Jewish and democratic, is gradually producing an Israel that is neither Jewish nor democratic. So we're seeing a fight over who runs Israel. Is it going to be unelected judges? Or is it going to be the people? And sure, I know you can go back to the Federalist Papers and America's Founding Fathers, and there is a lot of discussion about tyranny by majority. And the America's Founding Fathers absolutely believed that you did need some restraints on majority rule. that voters could not vote for anything that they wanted. That if a majority voted to, I don't know, put a certain population to death or enslave a certain population or kill someone, that was a thing. Britain's Parliament could, by a majority vote, find someone innocent or guilty and potentially put them to death. And America's founding fathers specifically outlawed that. I think quite rightly identified, yes, there should be limits on a democracy. And in a democracy, it shouldn't be mob rule. There should be rule of law. And the majority shouldn't be able to do everything that they want. You know, there are fundamental limits on that. And so that's why America has a constitution. That there are things that America's voters cannot vote into place. And of course, you know, I mentioned, well, a democracy shouldn't be able to vote to enslave a certain population. That, of course, was something that was contended. And many of those that signed America's Declaration and that put their thought into the Constitution believed slavery would have to go, and eventually it did. But you've got... there are some limits on you probably want some limits on a democracy. But even America's, but Israel's Supreme Court goes way beyond that. And it's way beyond, okay, putting reasonable limits on and preventing kind of this tyranny by majority that the founding fathers feared. This is them just deciding for themselves and ignoring voters. This is what Melanie Phillips wrote in another article over the weekend. Talking about the court. It says, the court routinely employs double standards by favoring left-wing over right-wing projects or the rights of Arabs over Israeli Jews. People say there's no longer any point in voting since the judges run the country. Doesn't matter who we vote for, the judges are just going to do whatever they want anyway. The mindset now unites most of the progressive classes in Israel, Britain, and America. You know, I think this is where her points are fascinating, and she ties in what Israel's going through with Britain and America, and she's absolutely right. And I think that there is some fantastic insight behind what she's saying here, and this is where the truth in our booklet, The United States and Britain in Prophecy and America Under Attack, really come in and help inform and flesh out our understanding here. Why are we seeing the same movement in these three countries? Why are we seeing it's the same spirit in all three countries? That there has to be some kind of unelected priesthood that has ultimate authority, that voters can't be trusted, and that it's the will of this unelected minority that must hold sway. So going back to this article, for them, ordinary people, for those in Israel, Britain, and America, for them, ordinary people who don't share their views are their deplorables. By contrast, the judges, educated, liberal, cosmopolitan, are people like themselves. I think this is, I want to write on this. I want to think about this a bit more as well. And like I said, it's really the key to understanding this is that book, America Under Attack, and the United States and Britain in Prophecy, that give us this full picture of the biblical background of what is happening in America, in Britain, in Israel, in the Middle East. But you see these unelected bureaucrats everywhere. In the US, it's the deep state. And it's this attitude of, okay, well, the voters may have voted in Donald Trump, but we, the... people in the executive branch that on paper and according to the Constitution are there to do the will of the elected president, well, we have to thwart the president because we know better than the president and his voters. It's our will that matters. It's our will that is most important. And so we will pretend loyalty to the president while working to undermine him. We'll dig up all of these fake dossiers and whatever, anything that we can to stop him and slow him down. In the UK, I think we have this in large part through the European Union. It's certainly there, I think, in the same kind of officials and civil servants and judges. And you see the same leftist love of judges over here when they step in and stop elected people doing what they promised their voters they would do. I mean, you see that here where you look at opinion polls in terms of... So one of the big things, political issues in the UK, is illegal immigrants coming in these small boats. And the government, a conservative government, a right-wing government on paper, is doing very little about it. And yet you look at opinion polls and dealing with these boats, you know, this is not just slightly popular. It's not like 51% of people want them to do something about the boats. It's like 80%. It's people are overwhelmingly in favor of the government cracking down on these migrants, and they do nothing. And they do nothing in part because their hands are tied by these unelected bureaucrats and judges, and people step forwards with the European Court of human rights stepping in and tying their hands. And they do nothing in part, I think, because they lack the strength and the courage that it would take to fight and confront these people. And they lack the courage because a lot of these people are the kind of themselves part of the same liberal elite. And they may be quite happy to tell voters, yeah, we'll deal with migration. I think it's been in every manifesto of every elected government for the last 20 or 30 years. But they don't personally believe it. They know better in their minds than the voters. So they'll promise the voters that so they get elected while actually doing nothing. You know, we talked about this satanic attack in the first half, that these three countries, Britain, America, Israel, and the Middle East, they're under satanic attack. Satan is cast down. Revelation 12:9 talks about that. And Mr. Flurry's article from the latest trumpet print, Satan is real. Do you recognize him? He's attacking these three countries. And part of that attack is, well, you've got all of the, it's this will worship. It's these unelected bureaucrats in all of these countries that know better than the rest. They know better than the voters in Israel that voted in Netanyahu. And so the courts will do everything they can to stop that. And they know better than the people that voted in Donald Trump. And so he's got to go to jail, even if we have to try and find half a dozen different things. I mean, in some ways, he doesn't look like a squeaky clean guy, I guess, because he's done a few immoral things, I guess, over, some of, not in office, but, he's on his third wife or whatever, however many he's had. But for them to not find anything on him, you'd have thought the amount of rules there are in the United States, everybody's probably broken one or two, but they haven't been able to pin anything on him. That's pretty impressive. And obviously there's God, I think, is protecting him. But you've got that attack in there. And then in Britain, we've got this attack. And a lot of that is tying Britain to the EU still. It was all of these people trying to stop Brexit from happening so that these unelected bureaucrats in Europe can continue to rule. We had just the other week the Windsor framework. Parliament voting on that, this framework that it's all ostensibly about dealing with Northern Ireland and how to, okay, we've got an agreement, the Good Friday Agreement, that says there cannot be a border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, but Britain's now left the EU, so there's an EU border there, but we've signed this obligation saying that there won't be a physical border. How do we deal with that? And they've used this to push through the Windsor Agreement that continues to give the unelected bureaucrats of the EU some more power. Melanie Phillips is right on top of this story as well. She wrote, I think this was last week, maybe a little longer, that it will keep the UK tied to the EU with the potential for Brussels to tighten the screws still further. She quotes from Carolyn Bell, writing new rights under EU, saying that this new framework includes new rights under EU law for the EU to be consulted on UK goods and tax legislation and to monitor compliance competition risks with the single market. This article says, with the creation of a new directly effective EU regulations, the commitment to consult the EU on new UK legislation to monitor competition risks and to build physical border infrastructure in Northern Ireland, it is clear that the Sunak government has colluded with the EU to develop the Windsor framework as a vehicle for alignment with and even subjugation to new EU laws, which fall well outside the scope of matters covered by the Withdrawal Agreement Act, which implements the protocol in the UK. So, it's all of these unelected bureaucrats and judges and this we know best attitude, the spirit of the deep state and this will worship that's winning across all of these countries. And you see so much Barack Obama, the former president, behind this movement, even in all three countries. Remember, he was there for the UK, telling the UK, you better not leave the EU. If you quit the EU, you're going to go to the back of the queue. And so much of the signing of the Windsor Agreement is pressure from the US and from people like everyone from Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden. They've all been telling Britain, well, you better sign some kind of agreement with the EU. If you don't, we're going to punish you. And America's been pushing this in Britain. America's been pushing this in Israel. And you've got really the Obama administration pushing this there. In the run-up to this, you had the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Nides, I think his name is, he was making all these kind of comments about You know, Israel better not do this. We're very worried by this legislation. And normally you stay out of the business of your allies. You don't talk about internal affairs. You know, a typical response would have been, well, we're not going to get involved and it's a matter for Israel and Israeli voters. But he wasn't like that at all. In fact, he even said, I really think that most Israelis do not want America to stay out of their business. Now, if we don't like what Israel's doing, we have to get involved and we have to talk about this and we have to get in the way. And so they're working hard they worked quite hard to try and stop Benjamin Netanyahu making these changes to the Israel's court system, to try and rein in this out of control Supreme Court and to just roll the clock back to the way it was before you had this outbreak of judicial activism in the early 90s. And then, of course, the U.S. administration has weighed in on Benjamin Netanyahu's retreat and on the way that he stepped back and said, okay, we're going to delay our changes to the Supreme Court. The Biden-Obama administration is very happy about this. This is what they had to say. This is clip four.
So we welcome this announcement as an opportunity to create additional time and space for compromise. Compromise is precisely what we have been calling for. And we continue to strongly urge Israeli leaders to find a compromise as soon as possible. We believe that it is the best path forward for Israel and all of its citizens to find this compromise. Democratic societies are strengthened by checks and balances, and fundamental changes to a democratic system should be pursued with the broadest possible base of popular support. And so that's what we're going to continue to call for.
So calling for compromise, I mean, she's basically calling for Benjamin Netanyahu to give in. This is what they've been pushing all along. You know, these are red lines that you don't normally cross with allies, getting involved in their internal affairs. And this is absolutely in keeping with what we've seen from President Obama. This is what Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry wrote in his September article last year. Britain and Judah's governments fall, America next. And if you want to quickly understand the connection between these three countries, well, that's a great place to go. It was our cover article. I think it was a bit of a yellow cover with some dominoes falling. You can find that on our website, thetrumpet.com. That really explains these trends here. But he wrote here, when Barack Obama was president, he was terribly unmerciful to the Jewish nation of Israel. But in President Trump's first term, he saved the Jewish nation of Israel, biblical Judah, from much of Obama's tyranny. He supported Israel in many ways, including scrapping the Iran deal, moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, and helping Israel sign the Abraham Accords with Arab nations in the region. Joe Biden has taken America back to the terrorist-supporting policies of Barack Obama. He has, and he's absolutely still doing this. There's the article up on the screen. You know, it's the Obama administration that's really been pushing this. And they won. For now, the radical left have won this. The Jewish News Syndicate, they had a really good article this morning. A resistance coup just defeated Israeli democracy. A resistant coup. They're victorious in Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu climbed down, at least for now. This article says Netanyahu's announcement is leading to celebrations on the Israeli left, as well as among their foreign supporters, especially in the Biden administration and liberal Jewish groups. And they have good reason to celebrate. The anti-Bibi resistance was able to sell the world a false narrative about their efforts being nothing more than a successful effort to defend democracy against the effects of would-be authoritarians who wanted to create a fascist theocratic state. But the notion that an uprising of the people has stopped a coup by Netanyahu and his allies is pure projection. What the world has just witnessed was itself a soft coup, fueled by contempt for the nationalists and religious voters who gave Netanyahu's coalition a clear Knesset majority in November, and imputing to them their own desires for crushing political opponents, the cultural left have shown that it has, in effect, an effective veto over the results of a democratic election. Benjamin Netanyahu was voted in. He was elected to deal with this court. And this even goes through that even at one point, the opposition, before he realized he could score political points, he was all for dealing with, reining in this rogue court in Israel. Instead, you've had a soft coup. It's been a complete defeat for Benjamin Netanyahu. This was on a news program discussing some of this defeat. This is clip three.
So it was a speech of surrender, in a sense, because just a week or 10 days ago, he flatly rejected everything that he himself now proposed. He just caved under the pressure. And, you know, this is not an accusation. I think he did the right thing. But I wonder why we had to get to this, to virtually shut down the entire country.
They basically threatened to shut down the entire country. You had all kinds of strikes going on. You had reservists in the military saying, we won't serve. They were putting Israel's security at risk. And they won. I mean, it shows the incredible power that the radical left has been able to amass. I mean, the opposition was unhinged to what Netanyahu was trying to put forwards. When you control the media and propaganda to this level, it's a huge amount of power. They got people believing democracy is at stake. And it was just absolutely absurd. Was Israel a democratic state before 1993 when the Supreme Court started grabbing all of this power? Absolutely. Yes, it was. No one would deny that. But somehow they had them convinced. I don't think those that were at the top were convinced, but many of the people taking to the streets, yeah, they seemed like they were convinced somehow that democracy was at stake. I mean, it shows how hard it is to overcome these people. More from this JNS article. It says they've shown not even an election can be allowed to break the left's stranglehold on effective power via a system of courts and legal advisors that have effectively made Israel a juristocracy rather than a court ruled by the representatives of the people. That sends a dangerous message to the people whose votes determined the outcome of the election, that their views don't matter, and that they should lose faith in the ability of political action to have an impact on society. He basically talks about how Netanyahu seemed to underestimate some of his adversaries. He says he failed to understand that, like the willingness of the American political left to do anything to defeat former President Donald Trump, even if it meant dragging the country through 3 years of domination by the Russian collusion hoax, his opponents were prepared to set the country on fire, destabilize its economy, and even weaken its national defense to throw him out. It talks about the reservists refusing to serve. And it talked about how these reservists were ready to trash even the most sacred of Israeli civic traditions involving national defense in order to gain a political victory. And it talks about the U.S. opposition from the U.S. government. So it's a defeat. The deep state just won in Israel. Now, again, he said he's postponing it. We'll see. Maybe he'll come back fighting after unleavened bread and the holy day season. But maybe he'll need a bit more help to come back fighting and to win here. I mean, that's the story, I think, here is this tie-in with the United States. And, yeah, the radical left in the United States defeated Netanyahu, at least this week. But is he going to need help from the United States if he's going to have victory? I mean, that's what Mr. Flurry's been saying for years. And now you could see the need for that help becoming even more direct and acute. You know, so much of our analysis of what's going on has come from Revelation about 2 Kings 14. This passage that talks about a modern day Jeroboam. We know that there are other books like the book of Amos that has prophecy for Jeroboam. It's not just talking about Jeroboam anciently. Why would it, if it was, God wouldn't have recorded it in the Bible. And some of this prophecy was never fulfilled for ancient Jeroboam. They're modern day prophecies of a modern Jeroboam. Amos tells us there's going to be a modern type of Jeroboam. And so we can look at 2 Kings and find out, well, what did Jeroboam do historically that God had recorded in the Bible? That can tell us what this modern day Jeroboam is going to do. And one of the things that it tells us about this ancient Jeroboam is that he warred and he fought victories that helped Judah, that helped the Jews, not just his kingdom of Israel. 2 Kings 14 and verse 28 says, now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did in his might and how he warred and how he recovered Damascus and Hamath, which belonged to Judah for Israel, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And Mr. Flurry noted, this verse ties the politics of the U.S. and Judah together. Brett Noctegal had an article, BB is Back. He commented that this is also confirmed by what took place anciently. Jeroboam II had an unusually close alliance with the Jewish king ruling from Jerusalem, King Uzziah. Both kings worked together, which was far from the normal state of affairs between the two kingdoms. A period of national power stabilized both nations. Clearly, the modern counterpart of this relationship was on display during President Trump's first term, while Netanyahu was in power. So you saw this then, and then going back to this article, Britain and Judah's government falls, America next. Mr. Flory writes, 2 Kings 14:28 states that Jeroboam recovered Damascus and Hamath. The Sansino commentary says that Damascus was once ruled by King David, and the kingdom of Hamath paid tribute to David and became part of his son Solomon's kingdom. So the indication is that Jeroboam reclaimed something to help Judah and the Jewish nation. So is that what we're going to have to see? We've been forecasting that this, all these prophecies about Jeroboam means that Donald Trump is going to come back and that he's going to war and that he's going to recover things for Israel. And so is that going to tie in with what we saw in Judah over the last few days? Is that what it's going to take for Benjamin Netanyahu to win and defeat the Supreme Court deep state in Israel? I mean, it certainly brings a lot of these prophecies alive to see that. How much pressure was there from the Obama regime in America on Netanyahu? How much of that was behind him caving in? Were there things going on behind the scenes? Did you have this Obama administration that's controlling the Biden administration really putting on the pressure privately, even saying things like, well, look, we could accelerate Iran getting a nuclear bomb. You better do what we want. You better cave in here. Otherwise, we can really hurt you. Is Netanyahu going to need Donald Trump to come back and fight and recover things for Judah? I think that's a fascinating thing to talk about, to think about. Well, there was one more story I was going to get into, and I think I'll just cover this very, very quickly, where you had in the UK, Huzma Yousef was elected as Scotland's new first minister, and I guess Kamala Harris, that kind of caliber of person. He's not a very successful politician. He was a transport secretary who was caught driving without insurance by the police. He has all kinds of scandals and upsets. There's a lot of people in the UK rejoicing because to have him now leading the Scottish Nationalist and the Scottish Nationalist movement to be led by someone who's actually pretty incompetent. There's a lot of people that want the UK to stay whole that see that as a good thing. And I have some sympathy with that view. He beat what's her name? I always forget it. Kate Forbes. He beat Kate Forbes, who was a devout Christian. She's very traditionalist. She believes homosexual marriage is wrong. While Huzma Yousef, he was behind Scotland introducing radical hate crime legislation where you could go to jail even for saying something negative about the homosexual movement in the privacy of your own home. And he's behind this push for self-identification where someone can change gender at the drop of the hat by just saying, well, I identify as this different gender. He's a radical, radical politician. And the fact that Kate Forbes was rejected, it reminds me of this case of Chris Farron, the Liberal Democrat leader that we talked about a bit on this show years ago, where he basically said, you cannot be Christian and a leader of a political party in the UK. And we've seen that once again, that you cannot be a traditional Christian and do well in politics. And I think that's a sad reflection on the UK too. But I wanted to take a few minutes for some more positive news as well. I think there has been a lot of negative news today. You know, we've had the school shootings that are always very tragic and emotional. And then we're seeing bad news from Britain, bad news from Israel in the Middle East, bad news from the UK. So I wanted to cover a bit of news from the James Webb Space Telescope from about a month ago. So a little bit older, but we do need that reminder. We need to lift up our eyes. We need that reminder that God is in control, that he is the creator. He's working all of this out according to his plan. And he has a wonderful, wonderful future there for all of mankind. And we need this hope amid all the bad news as well. So February 15th, you had another fantastic image released by NASA. This was of the so-called Pandora's cluster. I think we've got some pictures that we should be able to show you of that. It's a new look at the early universe. It's three clusters of these galaxies merging together. I think I've got it next to me, so hopefully we can get that on the screen soon. But it's there we go. So it's this look at the early universe, and what you have is with Pandora's cluster, a lot of very massive galaxies close together, and gravity bends light. So when you have huge masses close together, it can act as a magnifying glass, and that's why if you look at the picture, you can see certain things are distorted and twisted. So Pandora's cluster has a great potential because it's a cluster of galaxies to bend a lot of mass to be a really powerful magnifying glass. It's a fantastic lens, but it's a dirty lens. And they've not really been able to use it before as a lens because there's these massive clouds of gas that have gotten in the way and we can't see anything. But James Webb has excellent infrared detectors that allows it to see through these clouds of gas and look beyond and give us this incredible picture that sees some incredibly distant distant galaxies. And so the result is an exceptional look at the distant universe, the ancient universe, the early universe. And so they're still working through what this means and what those analyzing what they can learn from these pictures. But already we've got results from earlier pictures of the distant universe. And we had a paper published in Nature magazine on February 22nd, where they'd been analyzing a lot of these pictures from James Webb. And I wrote on this back, I think, in September. But now we're seeing even more and more confirming this, where James Webb telescope is posing a huge problem, a major problem for the Big Bang theory. And specifically for this idea that you had a Big Bang and then galaxies and stars gradually evolved out of that to what we see today. And it's that process of a gradual evolution that that the James Webb Space Telescope is throwing massive problems up for. This is from one of these authors of the paper. He said, we expected to only to find tiny young baby galaxies at this point in time, but we've discovered galaxies as mature as our own in what was previously understood to be the dawn of the universe. That's a big problem. You know, if you've got this evolutionary process where you have very small, simple galaxies come together and gradually build up into the more complicated and mature ones we have today, well, if you look back in history, that's what you should see. And instead, they're looking back to when they think, in some cases, they're looking back to where they think galaxies shouldn't have even evolved yet, quote unquote, and they're seeing mature, complicated galaxies. And they are really having to tear up their entire model. There is this same author. It says, the revelation that massive galaxy formation began extremely early in the history of the universe upends what many of us had thought was settled science. We've been informally calling these objects universe breakers. Universe breakers. They're breaking this view of the universe without a creator that somehow gradually evolved all by itself. He said, we looked into the very early universe for the first time and had no idea what we were going to find. It turned out we found something so unexpected it creates problems for science. It calls the whole picture of early galaxy formation into question. He goes on to talk about how when they first started seeing these galaxies, they thought it was a mistake. They thought there was some problem with their instruments and their telescopes, and they've been trying and trying and trying and can't find these mistakes. You know, and they're finding galaxies that they're too big. They're the galaxies that contain stars that scientists believe are old stars. Because again, if stars gradually evolve, then they start as mostly hydrogen and then get heavy elements late, much later on. But instead, they're finding stars with these kind of heavy elements. Space.com talking about some of the six massive galaxies they find there. They wrote, nobody expected them. They were not supposed to be there. And now nobody can explain how they formed. So, you know, it's a fantastic reminder in the midst of some of this bad news that this James Webb telescope is out there pointing us back to our creator, pointing us back, really kind of showing in mankind's face, look, there's a God, there is a creator. He designed everything. It didn't just evolve with no purpose. There is hope. And there is hope for the little girl that was killed in that school shooting. And God has a fantastic vision for her and for her family. And they're going to have an opportunity to go out and fill the universe. You know, God has a family plan that involves mankind helping finish the creation of the universe. It's a plan that just is so grand, we cannot even hope to imagine it. We have more on that in our free book, Our Universe Vision. You can read that. I've also mentioned on the show the United States and Britain in prophecy, America under attack. If you do want to understand those trends that are going on in Britain and America, and both of those books as well, put those trends in context of that wonderful prophetic purpose and prophetic hope. You can get those by emailing us, td@thetrumpet.com. Please do send us our emails. You can give us your emails. Give us a call at 1-866-930-3024.